Good evening, I'm Al Vohner, and you're listening to this week's edition of The Public Eye, right here on 90.5 WICN, Jazz Plus for New England. You can follow us on Facebook and Twitter. Listen online at WICN.org. Hope you've had a great start to the holiday season. I know we've got a few more weeks to go. But there's a topic in a book that came across my desk recently, and I just felt that it was an important segment that I wanted to share with all of you. The book is Outsmarting Cancer, Risk Reduction and the Power of Prevention, and my guest is the author, Dr. Adam Barasok. And for the next half hour, we'll be talking with Dr. Barasok about the book and more specifically about the prevention and some of the things that he's come across through his research, his experiences. I even said to Adam earlier before we started the broadcast that every one of us across the globe, we either know somebody or we hear about somebody who has fallen to cancer, found that they have cancer, been diagnosed with cancer, something we don't want to hear. But if we can find some new ways of preventing cancer, I think that's a big plus. And that's why we've asked Dr. Barasok to join us. Adam, nice to have you with us.
It's a pleasure to be here, Al.
This is, you and I, like as I said, we talked a little bit beforehand, and, it's not a topic that you want to sit down early in the morning with a cup of coffee and some of your coworkers and some of your friends and discuss. But inevitably, in conversations, in social networks, you have somebody say, "Oh, by the way, did you hear what happened to Joe? Did you happen to hear what happened to Susan?" No, she was diagnosed with cancer, whether it's breast cancer or colon cancer. There's many forms of that. But let me ask you directly, Outsmarting Cancer. I love the title of the book because it's optimistic, it's very positive, but I'm going to assume that you feel like many people do. It's like, well, how can I today and for the rest of my life and even with my family prevent cancer from taking hold? Was that the main premise for writing the book?
Exactly. As you said, it's not something that people like to talk about, but unfortunately for me, cancer is very much top of mind, runs in my DNA. I've lost many family members to cancer, and I treat cancer patients day in and day out. And one thing I'll tell you that so few people know, but is so important to stress, it's that nearly half of all cancers in this country are preventable. Whether it be smoking, whether it be obesity, vaccines, so many of our lifestyle choices, increasingly we're seeing research that they do increase our risk of cancer. And particularly we're seeing this in young adults. Cancers in folks under 50 have more than doubled. They're tied to obesity and they're tied to many other unknown factors, which we're still trying to account for. Things like microplastics, ultra-processed foods, air and water pollution. I think there's so many small steps that each of us can do in our daily lives to try and reduce our cancer risk and reduce the burden on the health system, on our family members at large.
The thing that was interesting, I was just listening because I was going to ask that question, but you must have been reading my mind, is that you spelled out some of the elements that play a role in causing cancer. I know when I was a teenager, smoking, and it still is, tobacco was really number one at that particular time. But just now you're talking about, household products, the processed foods that we eat, and so on and so forth. So, somebody listening to the show would say, how do you avoid that? I go to the supermarket. I need bread. I need, fruits. I need meats. I need snacks around the house. I can't avoid that. I go outside. I'm breathing the air that everybody else is. How do I avoid, putting myself at risk for that? What do you tell somebody when they say, hey, Adam, I read your book and I heard you on the Public Eye and it all makes sense. But how does the average person start anew, because it's probably not something they've been doing up until that point, to avoid all of this? I mean, do they have to change their lifestyle completely?
Absolutely. I think no one has to, turn on their heads and change their lifestyle completely. I can give you five of the highest yield, simplest things. As you said, number one, as we've known for decades, is don't smoke, which easier said than done. But anything you can do to reduce your tobacco intake, number one. Number two that we're now learning more and more is obesity, which can be related to diet, can be related to exercise. You know, we're living in this revolution of weight loss medicines that are becoming widely available. Obesity, then there are specific foods that have the highest and the best established risk for cancer. Those include processed meats, so deli meats, especially things with like nitrites, and red meat. Trying to minimize your intake of red meat, as good as a burger sounds in this cold weather, you don't have to go crazy, but try and do one steak or one burger a week, something like that. Then there's all the preventative health, which I think so many folks are you know, whether it be due to their insurance, due to the way our society is built, are simply missing out on. Things like vaccines, you know, all young adults should be getting an HPV vaccine. All people should be getting hepatitis vaccines, which we've recently, you know, there's been news about the administration changing some things at the CDC. But those vaccines significantly prevent a number of cancers. And lastly, screenings. You know, if everyone gets their colonoscopy when they're supposed to, gets their mammogram when they're supposed to, their pap smear, we could be reducing the number of late stage cancers, catching them early when you can cut them out by 20-30%. So those five simple things already put you nearly half your risk of getting cancer as it is. And then everything else. Yeah, go ahead.
No, you continue. It's okay.
Besides those five things, which are very well established, I think to your point, there's so many other things that we're just learning now have such a huge impact. And unfortunately, many of them, you know, microplastics, water pollution, air pollution, it's hard to avoid. But there are, you know, there are simple changes. We're seeing, for instance, from a microplastic perspective, if you just avoid plastic water bottles, you use a wooden cutting board instead of a plastic one. Use detergents and dishwasher pods that don't have plastic in them. That's already significantly reducing your plastic burden and how much plastic you're putting out to the world. And then same with air water pollution. You get a water filter, you get an air filter for home, and you choose wisely when it comes to things like anti-stick cookware, plastic containers. There's many little tweaks that anyone can do, which I go over in detail in the book, that can make a huge impact.
Okay, so these things, as you said, they sound simple. It's not like a life-altering process. But then let me go on the other side, if you will, and talk about hereditary issues. People mm-hmm. say, Jesus, you know, my mother and my dad passed away. I hear this all the time, or an uncle or an aunt. Passed away from that, so I'm scared to death that I may, as I get older, and as you said, you can go and have your colonoscopies, which I know I do faithfully. It's a scary every time you go in there. You wonder, how will I come out? But once it's all said and done, it does give you a lot of peace of mind. But how much does hereditary or lineage through family members, because I know cases where a parent has had it, passed away, but no one else in the family, none of the siblings, none of the children had any issues. So is that almost a something that people need to be worried about, that, oh, geez, my dad or my mom passed away, so I guess I'm going to be in line for that at some point. Is that something that they should be concerned about?
I think that's an issue very near and dear to my heart. You know, I lost my grandparents to rare blood cancers, and they were both, actually my family's from Ukraine. They were both very near the Chernobyl nuclear accident. My mother's also been diagnosed with a rare blood cancer. I worry, is this something that's in my genes? But I think reassuringly for the vast majority of people, that's not the case. Only 5-10% of all cancers diagnosed are hereditary. So there's a gene that's been found in your family that causes that cancer. Most commonly, that's the BRCA gene, which causes breast cancer, pancreatic cancer, prostate cancer. So if you have family members who had one of those or multiple of those, you should definitely talk to your doctor and ask about genetic testing. But outside of that and a few other genes, you know, it's fairly rare. And really the reason that people notice these trends is just because so many people get breast cancer, colon cancer, lung cancer. It's not crazy for a son and their parents and their grandparents to all die of the same thing, especially if it's a household where everyone smokes.
Right.
You know, so that's the best thing we can do, once again, is address the things that we can change in our lives and get the testing we need if it's appropriate for us.
Yeah. I want to go back to something that you said just a moment ago, but I just want to take a quick pause to remind our listeners that you're tuned to 90.5 WICN, Jazz Plus for New England. You can follow us on Facebook and Twitter. Listen online at WICN.org. I'm Al Voner, and this is The Public Eye. Nice to have you with us this evening. My guest is author and MD, Adam Barsok. His new book is Outsmarting Cancer, Risk Reduction, and the Power of Prevention. You put my mind at ease, and I'm sure many of the listeners will feel the same way, that, okay, you're not at a high risk because of hereditary issues. But I was just thinking, as you were talking about all the things that have entered our lifestyles today. I'm a baby boomer. I'm not saying that things didn't, you know, that we didn't have those same things back then. But I'm just wondering that if you go back to a time when, you know, plastics were not a norm in people's lives, processed food did not exist, and I may be talking maybe a century ago, you know, were they maybe healthier? You know, we think of all these, I guess what I'm trying to say, Adam, is we think of all these lifestyle advancements that have made our life so easy, you know, so much better, supposedly. But are we more at risk today than people, you know, our ancestors or folks from, let's say, 75, 100 years ago?
I think it's a mixed bag. You know, we've made a lot of important improvements. For instance, we all used to use leaded gasoline, which put lead and a bunch of other particles into the air, causing far more lung cancers than the gasoline does now. So there've definitely, and between vaccines, you know, medical screening advancements, I think in general, the risk if a person has cancer, the risk of dying from it today is far lower because of all the treatments we have and the excellent screening programs. But the overall rate of people dying from cancer, right, the number of people diagnosed from cancer goes up and up every year, especially among young folks, because of some of these aspects of our lifestyle that, you know, no one ever thought about the downsides of putting so much plastic just out there into the world, or how much, you know, how much ultra-processed foods we use, all this junk you buy and wrapped in plastic that can last 100 years, that has a list of chemicals two pages long, right? We've made all these advancements to make our lives more convenient without ever stopping and thinking about what long-term repercussions they may have for our health. And I think now's the time to really hunker down and make those tough choices for the sake of ourselves and our kids and the future of our species.
I'm so glad you said tough choices, because for many people, this may seem you know, like no big issue. Well, I can make that change, you know, no problem whatsoever. Many people say that, and maybe they make, you know, an honest attempt to do so. But I think, you know, we're creatures of habit. You know that better than most people. And it's very hard to give up, you know, your morning cup. I'm not saying coffee causes cancer. I'm just using that as an example. But as you mentioned smoking, you mentioned gasoline, and, you know, the things that we've become so accustomed to having in our life, especially as we get older, we're less inclined to, you know, eliminate because it's comforting. We know what it is. We've used it often. It's become part of our our lifestyle. So changing can be, I would imagine, and that's really what I'm asking here. Do you find that people hear what you're saying? You know, they're going to read it in the book Outsmarting Cancer. But are people prone to make these changes? Are they proactive, I guess, is what I'm asking.
That's an excellent question, and I'll tell you, I myself am here drinking my K-cup coffee, probably laced in plastic. So it's hard. I think what I tell my patients all the time is the best diet is the one you can stick with, right? The best exercise regimen is the one that you're able to keep coming back to every day or every week. So it's important to find the things that you know you personally yourself are able to change and make small incremental steps. You know, even for many of my patients who still smoke, you know, if you can cut down to half a pack from a pack a day, you're significantly reducing your exposure, reducing your lung and bladder cancer risk, right? It doesn't have to be an all or nothing black and white kind of thing. And I think the other aspect of it is it's not all on the individual. I think there are so many societal issues that we should be addressing. between our, you know, reliance on cars, between how much pollution different industrial processes put out, the plastics, our healthcare system, which really fails and neglects preventative care. So it's not just up to everyday folks who are struggling to get by and you know, pay all the bills on time, especially in this economy. It doesn't all fall onto them. I think we need to, you know, we need to be voting the right way. We need to be holding our politicians, our corporations, the pharmaceutical industry accountable, because that's where the biggest and most impactful changes are going to happen.
I'm glad you brought that up, because I think you're exactly right. I think especially today, you know, we're seeing cases where even violence you know, has played a part in the anger that many people feel. It's not what we want to say. It's not what we want to see. It's not, you know, we obviously know that's not the right way to approach it. But, you know, when you're, you know, in a situation where either yourself or a close friend or a loved one, you know, has cancer or has the symptoms but needs extensive care, you know, the cost can be, as you know, can be astronomical. That sometimes, Adam, and it scares the life out of me, and I'm sure it does for many people. It's like, what if I am diagnosed? You know, is this going to, will I have to sell my home? Will I have to, you know, go through my whole bank account to be able to afford the medical care? And I can tell you, I know people who have pushed off certain care and certain processes because they fear that, you know, once they get involved on the medical side with the care and the regimens, if they are indeed diagnosed with cancer, that they're going to be in serious financial peril. Is that something that people should not be concerned about, or do you see that is a roadblock for many people, especially, you know, patients that you treat, where they say, yeah, I understand, doctor, but, you know, I don't know if I can afford that?
Listen, in this economy, it's so reasonable to be worried about healthcare costs. But I'll tell you that especially preventative measures save so much more money for the individual and the health system at large in the long run, right? Something like an HPV or a hepatitis vaccine, which costs basically nothing, has a 20 times return on investment, right? Even things like colonoscopies, you know, like mammograms, certainly they can have some out-of-pocket costs for some patients with certain insurers, but compared to the costs of metastatic breast cancer, lung cancer, you know, it's really night and day. But I think it's important to ask why does the system fail so many people? Right. Why do we fail to focus on prevention? Why do we fail to put invest our money where it matters? And, you know, it's kind of like when they asked Willie Sutton about why he robbed banks, because that's where the money is.
Right.
No one's making money on prevention. Right. The pharmaceutical companies are making trillions of dollars on the cancer regimens and drugs we have, which without a doubt have extended people's lives. But that's not where they don't cure cancer. And they cost hundreds of thousands of dollars for everyone undergoing a year of treatment. And a lot of that money, unfortunately, gets passed down to just everyday patients and creates a huge problem for them and their families. So I think we ought to be rethinking our approach to cancer. We ought to be rethinking our approach to public health, which shouldn't be a partisan issue, right? Democrats, Republicans, like you said, everyone you know is at risk of cancer, especially young people today, more so than ever. We really ought to be setting politics aside and fixing our healthcare system so that people aren't afraid of these bills coming their way and are able to get the care that they need.
And you know, Adam, there's no denying it. Both sides of the political spectrum, and I know there's a lot of splinter groups within the major parties in this country today. But what I'm getting at is that lawmakers across the country, from coast to coast, have heard this story 100 times, a million times, that we need changes, and yet there seems to be very little. They're certainly always willing to listen to somebody or a group talk about what needs to be done, and yet nothing gets done. So I guess for you personally, I mean, for a practitioner treating these patients, and you know, I mean, not everybody walks in as a multimillionaire saying, well, if it does happen, I'm prepared to shell out a lot of money to, you know, to get the, you know, the care, the treatments that I need. 90% of the average population in this country cannot do that. So it's got to be very discerning for you. As you said, you know, you've got personal stories, you've got personal family members and friends. You certainly wouldn't want to see them suffer because of the fear of astronomical costs. So going back to the whole premise of this, of outsmarting cancer, prevention, early prevention, make some changes in your life now. Is that working as an alternative to trying to get Congress or our legislators to do something? I mean, right now it sounds like there's two things. You can keep batting your head against the wall, either going to Washington, going to your state capitals and arguing your point, which every one of us has the right to do, or you can take those preventative steps. It would seem to me, where I sat, that taking the preventative steps makes sense. So when you sit down with patients, or when you sit down with people, early on, are they buying this argument that, you know what, prevention in the long run will save you, you know, the aggravation of having to call your state representative or your congressman, and at the same time, it'll help save your life. Are people buying into that?
I think so. I think more so now than ever, and I have a lot of folks coming to me with different studies they read online asking, is this good for me? Is this bad for me? I think it's very important to stress, you know, we're thinking something like 40 to 50% of cancers worldwide now would be preventable if everyone were to live a perfect lifestyle. But the flip side of that is that means that half of cancers wouldn't be preventable, right? And I think it's really important to avoid any sort of victim blaming and to avoid guilt, right? If you get diagnosed with cancer, it's not your fault. It's not that you did something wrong in your life.
Right.
A lot of this is random. Some of it is genetic. Some of it is environmental exposures that we simply don't know about and couldn't know about right now. And that's why it's at the same time still really important to try and make incremental changes in treatment as well as and our healthcare system. And I think to your point, that there have been some improvements. Politicians are stubborn, but for instance, just a few years ago, there's now a cap on how much Medicare out-of-pocket costs a person has to pay. So anyone who has Medicare is not responsible for any more than $2,000 a year, or you can break it up into months.
Right.
That's the maximum that you're going to have to pay for drugs if you get diagnosed with cancer, heart disease, you name it.
Yeah.
So there have been some small improvements, but I think we ought to keep focusing on prevention, and we ought to keep kind of holding our politicians' feet to the fire, if you will, on fixing our healthcare system.
Yeah, I agree 100%, and I think the preventative route for any one of us, because it's basically, you know, it's free. All you have to do is make some, you know, it sounds simplistic, but sometimes the most simplistic things are the things that are toughest for many people to change. And like I said, we're all creatures of habit, myself included, but I buy into that. Start early, make changes in your lifestyle, which will not only help your health, improve your health, and perhaps extend your life as a healthy individual, and without having to deal with the aggravation of hoping that a law will be changed. No one person is going to achieve that in the short run. We've got just a few moments left, Adam. So let me ask you again: Outsmarting Cancer, Risk Reduction, and the Power of Prevention. The book is widely available. Go out and buy it. Local bookstores, you can buy it online. But if people want to get more information about you, your background, what you're working on, can they reach out to you directly? Is there a website, an email, a Facebook page?
Absolutely. So first off, the book is coming out in February.
Oh, February. Okay, I'm sorry.
Order it. It's on. No worries. It's on Amazon. It'll be on Barnes & Noble's. But yeah, if you'd like to read more of what I've written and reach out, there's a website, adambarsouk.com, or you can find me on Twitter. You can find me on Instagram. Please reach out with any questions. You know, I'm used to talking to folks day in and day out in the clinic, but I think we can have so much more of an impact if all of us around the country are engaged and asking the right questions.
Yeah, and today...
So I love to talk to folks.
Yeah, and I agree. I mean, today, I mean, it's not like, you have to go specifically where Adam is if you want to sit. No. Today, because of technology and social media, people can pose questions to you from the comforts of their home. And I know many people would feel more comfort being able to pose questions and get the feedback that they're not getting. A lot of people are not comfortable talking directly to their primary care physician or a stranger even. And I get that. It certainly makes sense. So Adam's putting the offer out there, and I would hope that people would take advantage of it. And as he said, the book will be released in February, Outsmarting Cancer, Risk Reduction and the Power of Prevention. Any questions about the broadcast, you can certainly give us a call here at the studios at WICN. Our main number is 508-752-0700. You can pose any comments, questions, or feedback to me directly. I certainly welcome that. That's Al Vona, V-U-O-N-A, at WICN.org. For the Public Eye, this is Al Vona. Thank you so much for being part of the show this evening.